Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Friday live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. NBA All-Star Weekend. Joy Taylor joining me now. We'll go to Chicago. She'll be at the NBA All-Star Weekend for the festivities. I'm heading to Vegas to watch a magic show with my son. So we're having a dynamic weekend. How are you, Joy?
I'm great. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Oh, you wore, there's a little pink in here.
Yeah, there's some pink stripes in there.
And you are looking lovely today.
Thank you.
You're somebody's Valentine's, I hope. The city of Chicago's Valentine's.
It's the city of Chicago's Valentine, yes.
All right, so it's Friday, it's fun. So I don't know if you saw it last night. Zion was amazing. 19 years old. 32 points. He now... most points per minute as a rookie. Wilt and Zion, 1 and 2. By the way, Michael Jordan, 6th. Kareem, 10th. Oscar Robertson, 7th. Now, all of you, most of you, nitpicked Zion. I did not. I said he's going to be a star very quickly in the NBA. I thought it would take the end of his first year. I said, give him to the All-Star break. After the All-Star break, gets in shape, gets the body right, he's going to be an all-star top 30 player in the league. A lot of critics, a lot of doubters. It reminds me of when I saw Russell Wilson. For the first 3 years, everybody said it's Pete Carroll. It's Marshawn Lynch. It's the defense. I said, no. Russell Wilson has an otherworldly talent. Russell Wilson, along with Steve Young, had the greatest escapability I'd ever seen in my life. Steve Young and Russell Wilson weren't perfect. Zion's not perfect. But when I look at a young person and I see a otherworldly ability, I see this with Tua's accuracy. I see it with Russell Wilson's escapability. And I see it with Zion's body type and explosion. Then there's only one other thing I look for. Self-awareness. Melo's never had it. Westbrook's never had it. John Wall's never had it. They have otherworldly talent. John Wall's the fastest player since Iverson. Melo's the best 19-year-old wing scorer since I don't know who. Westbrook's the most explosive, dynamic guard I've seen forever. But I didn't like him because I didn't see the self-awareness. So I knew Zion, I said he's going to be 20 to 24 a night into this league because his body, it's a cardio league. A lot of the centers are European. It's get up and down the floor, no hand checking, no forearm in the back. Nobody's going to want a piece of that body. Nobody's going to want to take the charge. Nobody's going to want a piece of the body. He's going to roll into arenas at 19, 20 years old and give you 24 a night just on effort, explosion, body type, size, girth. Nobody wants it. But then I look for self-awareness. Russell Wilson had it. I said, okay, all you doubters, I'm seeing this otherworldly escapability, but if you talk to Russell Wilson, I talked to him at 23 years old, shook his hand. I was in New Orleans at a Super Bowl. He was a guest, and I turned to a producer and said, that's a superstar. That's how they talk. That's how they act. That's how they look. That's their self-awareness. He's going to run this league. I've told this story before. Zion at Duke showed me these incredible leadership qualities. The internet, you have to quit Duke. This is outrageous. He did not listen. He did not follow. He said, of course I'm going to play. I'm a basketball player. I love basketball. He didn't follow Twitter and social media. He was a leader, not a follower. He said, I want to play basketball. I got to be honest. I want to come back and play another year of college basketball. I love it, but I probably have to go pro. So I saw immediately self-awareness, intelligence. He's not a follower. He's a leader. He's also never taken 20 shots a night. He plays within himself. He knows very much what he is and what he isn't. After having a very good opening game where he shot threes, you know what he's not doing since? Shooting threes. He knows that was an outlier. He knows that's a one-off. He's not a three-point shooter. He's not taking them. The Pelicans are plus 74 when he's on the court. He makes the team better. He plays with it himself. He's smart. He has self-awareness. He gets it. This is why I like Tua. This is why I like Russell Wilson. This is why I like Zion. I'm looking to spot a otherworldly talent. And a lot, not a lot, but you see about two, three players in NFL draft, one or two players in NBA draft. You're like, okay. But they don't all become legends. Some are iconic, Westbrook, but not really winning players. But the self-awareness with Russell Wilson, the self-awareness with Zion, to me, this is a star. This is a guy that I can put in front of the cameras for 20 years. He's not going to get in trouble off the court. Unless he gets hurt, he's not going to get in trouble on the court. People are going to want to play with him. And again, we nitpick everybody. We're like Steph Curry. He's an otherworldly shooter. Stop nitpicking. That will overcome the rest of his flaws. Zion is so uniquely explosive with a nice touch, it's going to overcome the other stuff. Everybody's looking for the perfect player. They don't exist. Michael Jordan was a ball hog. To the very end, he couldn't pass well. To the very end, he didn't have a ton of shooting range. He was a mid-range guy, the best basketball player of all time. Really wasn't a great long-range shooter, Michael Jordan. Wasn't a great teammate. He's the most relentless player I've ever seen. He's the greatest offensive player I've ever seen. Probably the greatest player I've ever seen. But Michael had flaws. Brady's not athletic. Russell Wilson's a little short. We're picking apart these guys. Spot the otherworldly talent. And then if they have self-awareness, which makes them more coachable, adaptable, amenable, they'll spot their weaknesses. They'll know their strengths. They'll get the right friends. They'll stay out of trouble. They'll listen more than they talk. Then you've got an icon. I saw it with Russell. I see it with Tua. And I've got it with Zion. And I couldn't be happier. Looks like a great kid. So this morning I'm driving in to work. Well, I was driving a Mercedes, of course, because you know the advertiser of the show. So I'm driving into work like Joy does in the morning and Goulet and Tui. We all drive to work. And I bounce around the radio dial. I don't care what people are saying, their opinions. I kind of like to hear the topics. I go show to show to show to show to show. What are the lead topics today? But I was listening as I was bouncing around the radio dial on XM Sirius to Channel 83 XM Sirius. That's our channel, The Herd. Nick Wright and Eric Mangini had a great moment on the show. It was really special. I was going to text them, but you can't text and drive. My kids tell me that all the time. So they were talking about, Nick started talking about Tom Brady and said, boy, he's sacrificed a lot. He thinks the reason Brady is thinking of leaving is because his feelings are hurt.
Some buddies of mine on the radio in Kansas City talking about the difference between a friend and an on-the-way friend. And an on-the-way friend is you call them in the middle of the night and say, I need you. And before you ask any questions, say, I'm on my way. And the reason I bring that up is I wonder if Brady's always thought in his head, okay, Belichick runs things the one way and we have the way we do things here, but if I ever were to tell him I need something, even though I've never done it, I know in my heart of hearts he'd be there for me. And Tom finally, for the first time ever, made that phone call. Bill, I need you. And the response was, sorry, Tommy, I'm busy. That would hurt, and that would make you reevaluate the relationship.
If I've sat there over the last 18, 19 years and seen a bunch of people pick up the phone and say, hey, Bill, I need you. And Bill say, hey, you know, I'm busy. And then suddenly I think, well, I'm going to pick up the phone and I'm going to get a different answer. Isn't that my fault? Why do I expect the organization and the person who runs the organization to suddenly get nostalgic about me?
I side with Mangini here, although I thought Nick's points were excellent. Tom has been the spokesperson for the system. This system does not have a soft landing. There's no Disneyland at the end. It's a tunnel of harsh. It's got its own slogan, the Patriot Way. Brady laughed at the Super Bowl parade where Bill chanted, no days off. It's not that he's been just a member. Tom's been the spokesman. Tom's been the guy that takes the pay cut. Tom has lived in that tunnel of harsh, the Patriot Way. Punitive, intense, unforgiving, laser-focused, and he has benefited greatly. But when Belichick took over the franchise, do you remember the two players they had? They had a guy named Ben Coates. Tom Curran wrote about that in Boston this week. Ben Coates was a Pro Bowl tight end, aging but great. And then they had Drew Bledsoe, and Bledsoe had a left tackle named Bruce Armstrong, also a Pro Bowler. They were Pro Bowlers. They were the glue of the franchise. Less than 2 weeks after Bill Belichick was hired, he let them both go. As Tom Curran writes, the reasons were simple. Both were in decline. Tom knew the game day one. Tom Brady is looking for Disneyland. This is not Disneyland. Okay, that could be the Chargers. That could be Indy. That could be Tennessee. But Tom has been the spokesperson for the most punitive, the harshest, the most bottom line, the Patriot way, no days off. Tennessee is going to be more fun. Indianapolis will have a better offensive line. The Chargers will have more weapons. But this is the most frugal, bottom line, harshest, intense, laser-focused franchise in the National Football League. And it's probably not the most human way, the most sensitive way, but it's benefited Tom greatly. I think one of the most frustrating things in any relationship, you hear men complain about it, you hear women complain about it, trying to change who people really are. Don't get married and try to change people. Don't go work for a company and try to change the company. Bill is what he is. He has never given you false hope that he'd give you a big balloon payment on the way out. Tom got his feelings hurt because Tom's trying to change what Belichick is. That is an exhausting relationship to be in. If I'm Brady, I retire or I go have fun in Tennessee, Indianapolis, the Chargers. But you cannot expect a soft landing at the end of the NFL's harshest tunnel.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Jason Tatum last night scored 39 points. He's the Celtic kid out of Duke. Terrific player, had an unbelievable rookie year. And last night he had 39. He helped his team, the Celtics, at home beat the Clippers in overtime. We'll get into the game later. But he had a great rookie year. We all kind of fell in love with him. And then I started hearing stuff in the last year and a half. He's regressing. Ceiling. Hit a ceiling. You know, he's not nearly as good. I see a lot of flaws in his game. And then this year again, he's incredible. 7 points more per game. His three-point percentage is up. His rebounds are up. His assists are up. Oh, my Lord, he's just back to being terrific. What's the common thread? No Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving's a unique talent, but he was a great rookie without Kyrie, and now he's great without Kyrie. And he was really good in that one playoff series and playoff run a couple years ago when Kyrie was hurt. He didn't work with Kyrie. Kyrie didn't like Brad Stevens. Have you noticed Jaylen Brown has popped as well this year, 20 points a game? Environment matters. All the time I talk about in the show, life and environment, you do realize NBA players are just like us, but taller. NFL players are just like us, they're humans, except bigger and stronger. And baseball players are just like us too, except they throw 97-mile-an-hour splitters. The reality is athletes are just like us and suffer the same vagaries and maladies and issues that we all do. So ask yourself with Jason Tatum, does environment matter? Of course it does. A child growing up in a more chaotic home statistically has a much greater chance at problems than a less chaotic home. I've been a broadcaster for 25 years. I've always been a better broadcaster when I have better bosses and better teammates. When I have bad ownership and bad management. There was a place I had that for a couple years. I stunk. I was no fun to work with. Jason Tatum without Kyrie Irving is allowed to flourish. This is why I like Andrew Wiggins in Golden State. From a losing culture to a winning culture. To a better head coach in Steve Kerr. To better teammates. To a better system. To a better supportive, smarter ecosystem. And what has Wiggins done? Now, I know it's just three games. But he's averaging... He's taking six fewer shots a game in Golden State and yet averaging more points. Of course environment matters. Do you believe that Carson Palmer gets drafted by the Patriots, Tom Brady gets drafted by the Bengals, and Tom has all those trophies and Carson has none? Of course coaching matters. and cultures matter. That's why when you get a when you come in, Mel Tucker just left Colorado. He's going to Michigan State as a football coach. The first thing he's going to do is create the Mel Tucker culture. What matters? You put message boards up. You got posters up. What matters? Inspiration. Let's center the program. What will be vital and crucial for our growth as a program? This is what you do. You build the ecosystem. You build the culture at Google, at Microsoft, at Amazon, at Fox Sports. You build it. You build it at Disney. You build the culture, and then you find people who are talented, often from they're undervalued because they've been at lousy cultures. You get them, bring them into your culture, and they flourish. Steph Curry wouldn't be Steph Curry with Charlotte. Klay Thompson wouldn't be as great. He'd be a very good player. He wouldn't be as great with the Pelicans years ago. This is why Wiggins is going to kick butt. He's a kid. He's 24. He's going to grow. And this is why Jason Tatum, without Kyrie Irving, now has supportive teammates, doesn't have a super alpha point guard, has a Kemba Walker who can score, but is much better share and distributor of the basketball, though he likes to score. Environment matters to Jason Tatum because environment matters to you and me and everybody you know. Basketball players are us, just taller.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Kevin Durant makes more news for not playing than any basketball player in recent memory. He came out in one of his podcasts this week, Kevin Durant did, and said, I isolated myself after the Warriors swept Draymond Green incident under the rug. Now, you remember this incident. This was we had video of this where Draymond Green said, listen, you're a B-word, and you know you're a B-word. We don't need you. We won without you. That was this moment. So I had said at the time, this is something I came back to. I said, Kevin Durant's never going to forget this. There are lines you can't cross. Now, I didn't like what Draymond did, and Kevin Durant came out and said, listen, they never supported me. Like, I know stuff happens, but they never supported me. So first of all, KD's a very sensitive guy. Bill Parcells has said it for a year, the legendary football coach, treat everybody fair, don't treat them the same. I've got kids. They all have different hot buttons. The Warriors did not put their arms around KD enough for his taste, and he said, I never got over that. So we know he's sensitive. So in that area, I support Kevin Durant. He's a more sensitive guy. That's okay. And I think when you find a very sensitive guy like Kevin Durant, and then the basketball culture is different than the football culture. In America, the football culture is about building up men harshly. You're in college 3, 4, 5 years. Pay you, we wouldn't even suggest it. Go complain on Twitter. We can cut you. We can trade you. The head coach always has power, even over Tom Brady and Joe Montana. Joe Montana was traded off a great season. Brady, forget the pay cut. That builds up men. It builds up metal. Basketball culture builds up stars. That's different. There's a lot of coddling and worshiping. In basketball, the culture is spot the talent, surround the talent, Nike, AAU, college coach, and then groove the talent to be a money machine for all of us. It's a different culture. It's a more coddling, worshiping, protecting culture. Football's a harsher culture. But when you're sensitive like Kevin Durant and you've come through a culture that's increasingly worship-driven and coddle-driven, Kevin Durant's a guy who is hypersensitive by pro-athlete standards. There is nothing wrong with this. I think the Warriors probably, in my opinion, should have been more aware of it. But this does highlight a concern I have about Kevin Durant in Brooklyn. So the San Francisco media is, like most West Coast medias, chill. Steve Kerr's a former player, so is Bob Myers, the GM. Steph is the easiest superstar in my life to play with. Silicon Valley is very progressive, very star-driven, protect the star. It was the perfect place for Kevin, with one bad incident. Brooklyn, the New York weather's harsher, the media's harsher. Kyrie is a blamer. He calls people out. It's a losing franchise. It is not the number one star-driven sports platform in New York. Yankees are bigger. Giants are bigger. The Knicks are bigger. I think Kevin Durant should have aggressively, not passive-aggressively, addressed Steve Kerr and Bob Myers, gone to them. You have some culpability to go and, you know, call out your bosses if you're unhappy. That's not who he is. He tends to be a little passive-aggressive and sensitive. But again, let me go back to the beginning. I totally get him not liking the line Draymond crossed, because I think Draymond absolutely crossed the line, and the Warriors made a mistake not recognizing that Kevin is different than Klay and Steph. He is. You just have to come to terms with it. But we said this would never, ever. This was a huge issue. A lot of media people were like, they're over it. You do not. There are certain lines you don't cross. And if people are calling you the B word over and over, I got to tell you something. Friend calls me that. That's a line. I'll never forget that. So Kevin, I think, ended up because of one really ugly incident. Other than that, Warriors were pretty nice for him. Good spot. That moved him all the way cross country to what I believe is going to be a harsher, more punitive basketball environment. That's why I don't think it'll work.
What's up, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast. That's me. That's the show brought to you by Colin Cowherd's Podcast Network. Used to scout in the NFL, now I talk about football for a living. If you like football, this is the show for you. Coming up this week, why the Mel Tucker situation symbolizes the Pac-12's demise, and why players like Matt Stafford are so difficult to trade. 3 and Out Podcast with me, John Middlecoff. Go subscribe.
Last night, by the way, the Clippers lost, and Paul George got nicked up, and Kawhi, of course, is doing the load management thing. And so, you know, on most of the shows, like, you know, the kind of show we do here, the opinion-based shows, there's going to be a lot of this. Look at the Clippers. Right now, there are Lakers are a number one seed, and Milwaukee looks better. You have to understand what is happening with the Clippers in Los Angeles. These regular season games do not matter. The Clippers have been the most interesting regular season team. It was called Blake and Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan. It was called Lob City. And it had no impact on the L.A. basketball environment. Los Angeles, the Lakers, may be the only city in America, and Los Angeles is, that basketball is more popular than football when both are in the city. It may be the only city in America. In Philadelphia, they like the Sixers. They live for the Eagles. Okay, New York may be the only city where baseball, the Yankees, is bigger than the NFL. And L.A. is the only city where basketball, the Lakers, is bigger than the NFL. Mostly, if you have an NFL team, it's the most popular in your city. And so not only is basketball popular, but it is completely symbolized by the greatest franchise in league history, the Los Angeles Lakers. So when Steve Ballmer, the genius from Microsoft, bought the Clippers, it's about branding. Okay, they want their own building. They share a building right now. They're the little brother sharing it with the big brother, the Lakers. They want their own building. They want their own brand. They're trying to separate from the Lakers. And the only way to do that is to humiliate the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals and then win the title. And I'm frankly not sure dominating the Lakers isn't more important than winning the title. This is a brand play. Load management works for this franchise. It wouldn't work for other franchises. The Clippers are about winning a title and crushing the Lakers on the way to the title. And one title's not going to change it, and two may not change it. This is all about the postseason. This regular season stuff, they've been captivating in the regular season. It didn't change a thing in Los Angeles. Even with all their Blake Griffin, CP3 Lob City, they charge less than half of what the Lakers do for a ticket in the same damn building. They don't care. They don't have the massive TV deal locally like the Lakers do. This is about getting a title. Nobody in that organization is losing any sleep with regular season losses, load management, Paul George's semi-injury, Lou Williams taking a night off. You have to live in Los Angeles to get the power of the Lakers. You can't go anywhere in this town. Everybody plays second fiddle. The NFL plays second fiddle to virtually nobody. In L.A., Lakers way up here, Rams way down there. USC, third place. Dodgers, get behind the Lakers. And so that's what the Clippers are fighting. And so when everybody's getting worked up about the load management, Paul George is out, they're not playing great, in their building, it is about May and June. And by the way, they want to meet the Lakers so badly in the Western Conference Finals. They don't want the Lakers. They do not want the Lakers losing to Utah. They do not want the Lakers losing to Portland or losing to upstart Memphis or offensively gifted Dallas. The Clippers want to meet the Lakers in the Western Conference Final. They wanted to get a huge TV rating, and they want to beat them in five games and stamp on the Lakers. It is our town. That's what they want. Nobody with the Clippers wants the Lakers getting knocked out in the first or second round. They want to meet them in the conference finals, crush them, and then win the championship. And they want to do it back-to-back years as the Lakers age. Don't worry about the regular season. Clippers aren't.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Senior NBA writer for The Athletic, which, according to my sources, will own the world in about a year. Sam Amick, The Athletic, covered the NBA for 15 years, USA Today before that, and USA Today still. Let me figure it out. He's just Athletic now. He used to be at the USA. Yeah, these guys are all moving around out of the Athletic. It's just gobbling up everybody. Sam, you wrote about the Clippers' chemistry, and we saw a story about a month ago. Kawhi load management. It's not sitting well. Let's do a deep dive. What you learned, Sam, in regards to Kawhi, the load management, the chemistry. What's the truth behind the wall here?
Colin, as always, thanks for having me.
You bet.
My feeling has been, going back to when we wrote that piece and then certainly still now, is that it's a pretty understandable process that they have gone through, where you have this two collections of players and athletes and men, where the guys who were there before Kawhi and Paul achieved some pretty special things. Now, eighth seed in the playoffs is not normally called special, but they were a plucky playoff team that was gritty and that played above their heads. And honestly, I think the way they competed last year, winning two games against the Warriors in the playoffs, that was the kind of thing that the optics were great. Kawhi and Paul definitely were impressed as they figured out what they wanted to do with their futures. But the Lou Williams of the world, Montrezl Harrell, guys like that, Patrick Beverley, they with good reason took a ton of pride in the way they had their program built before. And then integrating two big-time superstars in Kawhi and Paul, and some of the unique elements specifically that come with Kawhi, which is that because of his physical condition, which we can't forget, this is medical stuff. These are health problems he has had. He's handled differently. And, early on this year, I do think it was there were some growing pains there between those two contingents. I do think they've gotten it together for the most part, and their goal has always been to take the long view here and just make sure that they found enough synergy by the time the playoffs came around to kind of mesh those two camps and have a title contending team.
So last night I'm watching Zion and a little Celtics. I watched the time fascinated with Zion. Before I get to that, let's talk about Jason Tatum, who was spectacular last night, was spectacular as a rookie. Now Kyrie's gone. He's spectacular again. There was a lot of talk last year. He's regressed. He's hit a ceiling. And my takeaway is environments matter. And the environment with Kyrie was not ideal. I think Andrew Wiggins will flourish in the Golden State environment. These are young kids. I mean, isn't it fairly clear at this point that Kyrie in Boston, it just didn't work?
Oh, 100%. I mean, and not only that, but some of those themes obviously have traveled with him to Brooklyn in terms of the way that kind of what comes with Kyrie. And I think my thing would be, if you're Jason Tatum, if you're Jaylen Brown, and you were going to set the storyline last season internally, which is to say that you kind of felt, maybe it wasn't personal, but you felt like Kyrie's style and his presence was holding you back. Well, if that's the way you're going to frame it, then you got to deliver on the back end when he's not around anymore. And last night, Jason in particular delivers in the kind of way that he never has in his career. And big stage, really good Clippers team, nationally televised game, just exciting stuff. And whether he's dunking on somebody's head late or hitting that step back three or blocking Lou Williams as he tried to get to the cup, Jason was incredible. And really, that was one of those moments where you go, wow, okay. Like, is he going to be their new franchise centerpiece? Because, last night he certainly looked like it.
Well, I'll tell you what, between Tatum, Hayward, Kemba Walker, and Jaylen Brown, you got four guys who can score 20. Now, Milwaukee's got the best player. But if Milwaukee, I don't trust Chris Middleton in the playoffs. You could make an argument if the playoffs is about depth. Last year, you know, Toronto, depth of starters. You know, is there four teams in the league? Is there one team in the league outside of Boston that has four guys that you wouldn't be surprised if they drop 24? It's a pretty unique team in terms of depth of scoring.
No, it is for sure. I mean, Toronto's got its balance, and when they're healthy, they're incredibly deep. So they come to mind. You know, Miami's a different landscape. You know, once you get past Jimmy and Bam Adebayo, and, you know, to a lesser degree, Dragic, you know, they don't have that kind of weapon to, you know, weapons to throw at you. The Milwaukee thing, I mean, it doesn't matter how dominant they are. They are going to likely finish with a historic season in the 70, you know, range from a win standpoint. But they're going to have to exercise the demon of the playoffs of last year, where not only did you lose against Toronto, you got swept, you know, after winning the first two. And that's the type of thing that, as far as, you know, deciding what we think of that group, you know, that's the kind of, call it rolling over, call it just not answering the bell from an adjustment standpoint. Mike Budenholzer, you still look back at that and say, how did that happen? And
right. That's
what they're going to have to reconcile. But in the here and the now, I do think, and this is kind of the flip side of it, I definitely still think we're sleeping on that group, because Middleton, I've been skeptical at times of his ability to be that second guy. I mean, I'll say this, he cannot play better given his God-given abilities than he is. The guy has had a wonderful year,
and
he's lights out shooter, and these are not kind of second tier co-star numbers. These are big time co-star legit numbers.
Sam Amick joining us, senior NBA writer of The Athletic. All right, I'm on the Zion train. I loved him at Duke. I think he's got that unique ability to be confident yet humble. I think he's got self-awareness. I think he's a leader, not a follower. He showed that at Duke, where he said, I want to come back for a second year. Of course I'm going to play following the injury. There's nothing I don't like about him. Sam, you're in NBA arenas every night. What do the sources say? What do the scouts say? What do the people say on Zion, who is putting up historically good numbers in his first, you know, 10 games?
Yeah, I mean, it's as you would imagine. I mean, they're as kind of, you know, crazy over this guy as the fans are, as the media is. The elephant in the room question is certainly, no pun intended, just his size and the ability to stay healthy. You know, I watch a game like last night against Oklahoma City, and, you know, you still see some of the youth. You know, he had that bad turnover late. That was a big deal. And then, but specifically, there was one possession, Colin, where he goes up to grab his own offensive rebound, and nobody's got a quicker second jump than he does on the planet. But his second jump, what struck me was it was this kind of jarring reminder of his size. And he jumped over Steven Adams, and it was special to watch, but it still just looked photoshopped from the standpoint of like the size of his frame. Like, are you kidding me? Like, there's so much bulk. And I know the Pelicans have pushed back hard against the idea that he's got to lose more weight. And I can't pretend to be, you know, a physiologist, a doctor, a trainer, any of the above. I'm not an expert in that field. As somebody who just generally likes seeing athletes, you know, stay healthy and maximize their talent, I just hope that he can put together a 20-year career. And if he does, he is a Hall of Famer. It's just, to me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, he reminds me a little of Karl Malone, a little of Sean Kemp, a little of Blake Griffin, and a little bit of Charles Barkley with the, you know, the butt, the base, where he can push guys around. All of those four are all-stars. So, to me, he's an all-star player with a superstar name, style. Duke clearly helped him get noticed. I think the I don't know if he'll be a superstar in terms of titles, but Barkley was a superstar and didn't win titles.
Right.
Marino was
a
superstar. Some guys have it. There's an it quality to him, Sam. I know this. When the NFL season is over, I turn into heavy NBA rotation every night. I watched this kid last night. I chose it over the Clippers, who were in my hometown, over Boston. I just wanted to see the kid play. And if I'm the average NBA fan, there's something there that Adam Silver has got to be licking his chops.
Oh, yeah.
He gets me to a television. That's all I know.
I'm with you, Colin. I'm sitting at my house last night, and to give you my setup, I got a bunch of spots in my house to watch games, but I have a projector that gives you the huge picture on the wall, and you put one game there, and then I have the laptop in front of me with the second game, and after about 5 minutes of watching Clippers Celtics, I kind of had this epiphany, like, what am I doing? This is Zion. I got to switch these. Zion's got to be on the big screen. And I guarantee you Adam Silver loves hearing all of this stuff because ratings have been down in the first half of the season. This is, for them, I think, a really exciting way to go into the All-Star break with a healthy Zion Williamson. With a lot of these teams that we talked about parity a lot in the summertime and all these different dynamic duos, we thought that was going to generate interest. I think early on it generated a little bit of confusion among the fans about,
yeah,
I don't have a villain and a hero anymore with the Warriors and the Cavs, things like that. Like, I think people have had to figure out who's who and what's what, but I think it's evolving, and I think it should be a fun second half of the year.
Senior NBA writer for The Athletic. It's worth the subscription. Sam Amick, you have a great All-Star weekend. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Colin. Appreciate you.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Enjoy Valentine's Day as a day of giving gifts to the ones you love. So we thought we've got some sports figures we talk about a lot on the show. And what would be the perfect Valentine's gift for the sports stars in our life?
Well, Colin, let's do Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. All right, should you get them for Valentine's Day?
All right, Goulet, do we have some... oh, God, that awful music again. Oh, that's bad. Okay, Embiid and Simmons... I think flowers, because flowers are the perfect consolation after a breakup, and they're not going to last. In 2 months, they're going to be broken up, because Ben Simmons, in 9 games without Embiid this year, averages 8 assists, 9.5 rebounds, and 22 points. So let's give him flowers. That's a beautiful consolation prize when people break up.
This music is so Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
What gifts should the Lakers get this Valentine's Day?
How about the oldest team in the NBA, a case of Ensure? Because whereas the Denver Nuggets have one player over 30, the Lakers' average age is 29.5. Boogie Cousins out. Anthony Davis missed 7 games. This is an old, old team. You know what they call a 30-year-old on the Lakers? Hey, kid. A case of Ensure as they age.
What kind of couch life are you envisioning getting someone Ensure for Valentine's Day? What gifts should Russell Westbrook get this Valentine's Day?
That's easy. A box of chocolates, because you never know what you're going to get with either one.
Forrest Gump.
So he's shooting 23% on three-pointers. I don't even know what to say to that. His average is like 31%, and the Rockets are 5-9 in their 14 biggest games. And so chocolates are unpredictable. I always go with a dark chocolate.
I love dark chocolate.
The square dark chocolate.
I don't like the nougat.
I'm not a nougat fan either.
You know, I need some nuts in there.
I'm dark chocolate. I always go the little square dark chocolate ones, almost always nuts or like fudge.
Yeah. Forrest Gump, low-key, very romantic movie.
Yeah.
Colin, what gift should Dak Prescott get this Valentine's Day?
I was thinking about this. How about a trip to Mexico? Because it worked for Zeke. He got a new contract. And also, remember, Zeke went, got a new deal when he went to Mexico. And it's a much-needed vacation after all this contract talk. It's gone on for 12 months.
He needs to relax a little
bit. He needs to go down there, and the food is spectacular. The waves, the weather is beautiful in Mexico.
What about Baker Mayfield? What does he get this Valentine's Day?
Well, you know he tends to talk a little too much. So I thought we'd get him candy conversation hearts, where you can only have 3 words.
Smart.
Like no comment or no comment.
Or like on to Cincinnati.
That's right.
Yeah.
So he talks too much. So if you get him candy hearts and he can only have 2 or 3 words, he won't get in nearly as much trouble.
Very thoughtful. All right, Kyle Shanahan. What does Kyle Shanahan get on Valentine's Day?
I think we both like Kyle Shanahan.
We do.
But he has had a couple of, how do we say this, stinkers in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. So I thought we'd get him cologne to cover up the stench of being outscored 46-0 in his last 2 Super Bowls in the fourth quarter. The Kyle Shanahan cologne.
Cologne is always a nice gift.
It is a nice gift.
All right, finally, the GOAT. What should Tom Brady get for Valentine's Day?
Well, you really got to think this one out.
Yeah. What do you get someone who has everything?
How about a heart-shaped card with a message inside? Roses are red, violets are blue. Come play in L.A. so I can see you. So he'll be
I mean, that's poetry for the ages.
It really is.